We are recording.
Okay, thank you everyone for joining us. It is 8:35 on Wednesday, March 20th, and we're going to call this meeting to order. Please remember, make sure I do the same, that your phones are on vibrate or mute. Please note that we have Mark Harris here from the Attorney General's office, and I'm going to start by reading the mission statement of our board. The Veterinary Board protects the health, safety, and welfare of the general public, as well as the welfare of animals by enforcing the licensing standards prescribed by statute for the licensing and regulation of veterinarians, veterinary technicians, veterinary premises, and animal crematories. And Dr. James, if you would do the roll call for us.
Dr. Byrne?
Not absent.
Ms. Krieger?
Here.
Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. James is here. Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson?
Here.
Dr. Ray?
Here.
Okay. Forum. All right, so we are starting with our initial investigative reviews, and the first case, number one, is 2445 in regards to Laurel McCannany DVM. And Annalise, if you'll read the front load for us.
All right. Case number 2445, the complaint is Sandra Mounts. The respondent is Laurel McKinney, DVM. On September 23rd, 2023, Buddy, a 12-year-old male Labrador retriever, was presented to the respondent for vomiting. Diagnostics were completed. Hypoglycemia and elevated ALT was seen on blood work, and no obvious foreign body was noted on the radiographs. Hospitalization was offered by the respondent. Complaint agreed. On September 24th, 2023, the dog had a seizure early in the morning. The dog was given an anti-epileptic drug, and blood glucose readings were taken throughout the hospitalization. At around 10 a.m., the dog was no longer breathing and CPR was performed. Owner elected to stop CPR a short time later, and the dog passed away. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act occurred. It was ARS 3222-3221 as it relates to R311-502M1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 for failure to ensure radiographs are permanently labeled with the name of the animal owner, name of the animal, the date the radiograph was taken, name of the veterinarian or veterinary premises, and the anatomic orientation. The motion was approved by 4-4-2-1 with Dr. Butler approving.
Okay, thank you, Annalise. And for this case, we do not have the respondent present. However, we do have the complainant, Sandra Mott, here, if you would like to come forward. Thank you, Sandra, for being here today. If you're both going to speak, I just ask that you both state your name for the record.
It's just me. She's here for support.
Okay, great.
My name is Sandra Mott.
Okay, great. Thank you, Sandra. I'm so sorry to hear about the loss of Buddy, and I can give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Okay. My concern is not just that the x-rays were not labeled. However, I got sent a huge stack of other x-rays of another animal that had my dog's patient number on them. So my concern was, were the x-rays I got initially when I was there even his? Sorry.
That's okay, take your time.
My hard part is that on October 11th, they actually sent me a letter stating that he was returned to me in stable condition. He truly was my best friend. McKinney had stated that she felt that his seizure was due to blood glucose and that they were going to give it to him. However, per the records that I got, they didn't give him any until 6:30 in the morning, when per the records it showed that his level was at 117. They kept him on the deck strip the whole night, and they gave him the midazolam. It took McKinney over a week to get back with me to even, she had no compassion, zero. When I asked, you know, what had happened, she goes, I don't know. I don't have any answers for you. Sorry. And then, like I said, then they send me this letter stating that he was returning. They have basically silenced me. Within 24 hours, they removed all of my records from the veterinary hospital, so I couldn't access anything. They removed me, so I couldn't access the app. When I even met with the medical doctor there, which was Dr. Sullivan, she too was kind of confused as to what transpired that night. They called me at 9:30 and said that they were still kind of watching him. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to get ready. I'm going to come in and see him. And it was around 10 o'clock that they said that they found him not breathing. My concern, and again, I got no answers, if he's in a trauma bay and he's supposed to be cared for right then and there, or, you know, right in front of him, how did they not see that everything was diminishing? His vitals seemed normal whenever they were checking him. They only checked him twice during that night. I just want them to be held accountable so it doesn't happen to somebody else. I know I'll never be able to get my boy back. I just need some kind of closure.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. You can sit back. So you can go ahead and sit back in the audience now. Thank you. And Dr. James, you are the lead on this case.
So initially I think the concern on this case was strictly around the labeling of the radiographs, but there were things that as I was reviewing it that came up that I had questions over, specifically with regards to it. To me it sounded like, and from the narratives and things that we have, that the pet was being closely monitored, but how well was that being communicated? And then I also have concern about the letter that was obviously not sent correctly, but sent to this owner in addition to the x-rays that were sent that shouldn't have been sent. In addition, you know, like there was just a lot of things that kind of went on in this case. And at first I was leaning towards opening a case against the premise holder, but then I thought maybe we should talk to the veterinarian involved and see exactly where all of this falls out before we open a new case. So I think in the case of 2445, I would make a motion that we move it to an informal.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to move case 2445 to an informal. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, thank you for being here. Now we are on number 5, 2449, in regards to Sarah Collin, DBM. Annalise, you can read the summary.
Case 2449, the complaint is David and Susan Galvarin, respondent, and Sarah Collin, DVM. On September 20th, 2023, Lenny, a 12-year-old male pug, was presented to respondent's premises on emergency for vomiting and anorexia. The dog had been seen by the primary care veterinarian earlier that day. Pancreatitis was suspected despite a normal test. The dog had a history of diabetes. The dog was hospitalized for supportive care and an abdominal ultrasound was recommended. The following morning, respondent took over the care of the dog. Ultrasound revealed mucocele and pancreatitis. Surgery was recommended due to a risk of rupture. Complainants declined surgery and elected medical management for pancreatitis and diabetes. A nasal gastric tube was placed for nutrition and blood glucose increased despite insulin administration. On September 22, 2023, the dog became acutely uncomfortable and pain medication was administered. Ultrasound revealed changes consistent with a rupturing mucocele. Complaints elected to humanely euthanize the dog. The committee concluded that no violations of the Veterinary Practice Act occurred. It was moved and seconded. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Thank you. So in this case, we do have the respondent and the complainant here, and Mr. Stoll is monitoring for the respondent?
Correct.
Okay. If the respondent, if Dr. Collin would like to speak? Or, no? No, sorry. Okay, no, my apologies. I misread it. So you're monitoring. Okay, so in that case then, I have the complainant, if you would like to come forward, Susan. Thank you both for being here today. I'll have you state your name for the record.
Susan Gilbaran.
Okay. David Gilbaran.
Okay. Thank you both. I'm so sorry to hear about Lenny. And I'd like to give you up to 5 minutes to address the board now.
Okay.
Okay.
You know
what,
David?
Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Arizona State Veterinary Medicine Board, I stand before you today with a heavy heart, seeking justice for an unjust treatment of my beloved dog, Lenny, as received by the hands of Dr. Collin and the staff at VBG on Camelback in Phoenix. The events that transpired, leading to Lenny's ultimate and painful demise, are nothing short of a nightmare. My journey with Lenny began on Wednesday evening, September 21st, of 2023. When my husband and I brought him to the EEG due to panting and restlessness, a sign of discomfort or pain. As a diabetic dog with a history of pancreatitis, Lenny's condition required an immediate decision. Yeah, earlier in the day, we had brought him to our regular vet.
Dr. Notario. And he was given the Serena, I think it's called, or Serenia.
Serenia, yes.
Yeah. Little did we know that this decision would eventually lead to the events that would ultimately cost Lenny his life. Upon arrival, we were initially confronted with the caring demeanor of the overnight veteran, Dr. Sienna Dresden, who explained the treatment plan for Lenny. And after discussing Lenny's diabetes and difficulty in controlling his blood glucose at the diabetes onset, and then switching him to a different insulin and food that we had successfully controlled his blood sugars, so he was in balance under our care. She was in agreement not to make any changes and stick to his schedule and continue using Novalin N and the food. I was using at the Diabetic Dog Owners University Quick Guide for Administering Insulin, which is AAHA accredited. She sent us home to get his insulin and food. However, as the evening, she was able to address his panting. She did have an IV port put in and was able to get him calm. Thank you. However, the care did shift on day shift to Dr. Collin. Things took a drastic turn. The lack of professionalism became apparent when a third invoice appeared for $6,211 and was presented without adequate explanation or transparency when questioned. Answers were evasive. Treatment was inexplicably paused, and leaving us in a state of confusion and distress.
And might I add, nothing about surgery. There was no mention of a surgery. Was not aware that that was even an option until the last hearing, because we would have explored that as an option.
Further exasperating the situation was the unauthorized change in Lenny's insulin regimen, a critical aspect of his diabetic management. Despite my explicit concerns and objections, Dr. Collin proceeded without my consent or knowledge, disregarding Lenny's established treatment plan and putting his health at risk. There was discussion also at this point where we had asked, since we weren't getting clear answers from her, we asked her if she could speak to our regular vet and just kind of run her ideas and her plan in front of him, because obviously we were not communicating very well with her. She was being evasive. Anyway, the gravity of situation reached its peak when Lenny was left unplugged. Now, this is on a Friday, the 22nd.
A.M.,
6:30 in the morning. If you wish, sure.
Okay, the gravity of the situation reached its peak when Lenny was left unplugged from vital support for close to 2.5 hours. Despite my repeated requests for him to be reconnected, this neglectful act prolonged his suffering and compromised his well-being, highlighting a gross lack of empathy and professionalism on the part of the attending staff, which was primarily Liz, the vet tech, who was present. Lenny received a nasal tube in the middle of the night to provide additional support for him, and he was to be trickle-fed and they were going to take the fluids off his stomach. None of this was performed. After our return, I had taken him out for a 6:30 bathroom break. We got back about 6:45, and everything just came to a halt. When I approached Dr. Collins regarding the current concern, she callously replied, "I'll get to you when I get to you." And this went on for hours. So, tragically, the final blow came in the form of a vial of medication administered by the vet tech, Liz. This glass vial, it was ungraduated, it didn't have any measurements on it, and she gave it to him, and he instantly was panting, and they did say he would pant, but this was more than just panting. He was in severe pain. I've got a video recording if anybody wanted to see it. I mean, I personally wouldn't just write that off as just a reaction to medication. So shortly after that, they did look, and that membrane did break around his gallbladder, which he then was euthanized. So that was the final blow. Throughout the ordeal, communication breakdowns, unexplained charges, a pervasive attitude of dismissiveness further compounded our anguish and frustration. When you're trying to sell me a $6,000 treatment plan, I had already paid, I think, $4,000 at this point. I'm there for maybe 7 hours. And I just wanted it. What are these? It looked like just a bunch of drugs. And there was the nasal tube in this estimate. And I was in agreement. At first, I hesitated because that would have been uncomfortable. But once Dr. Dresden came in and explained it, I was like, why couldn't she have done that in that simple way Dr. Dresden did, the importance of this? Instead, she just ignored me the rest of the day.
So, I'm sorry, causing... I'll have to kind of wrap it up here. So,
okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So,
I just want to add real quick that the drug that they gave Lenny without markings on it, I can't even pronounce it. It's boo. BUPRENORPHINE. You may all know it. I did a little research. Apparently, this is not a drug you want to, it's a narcotic. And it's not something you'd want to give to a 12-year-old pug without understanding. I understand it's also can be very sensitive because when administered, it apparently affects the bile duct that was apparently inflamed. I will also say, excuse me for suddenly drawing a blank, but anyway, this drug, I think, ended up being the problem. He plus the stress that had been, mental stress that had been put on my wife, which also transferred to Lenny. They were bonded. He couldn't see, he couldn't hear. So her anguish was transferred to him. This drug, along with that emotional state, I think compromised and caused the rupture. So that doctor, who didn't take the time to spend with his her patients, is what caused this. And that's where I put the blame on her as the attending physician.
Thank you.
Just one more. Okay. It does say in the medical records that it was given an injection at 7:30 a.m. on Friday, and that is not true, because nobody came into the room until 9:30.
Okay. Thank you both.
Thank you. Sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have Mr. Stoll is monitoring, and Dr. Nosley, you are the case lead.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, this case, as these type of emergency cases are, extremely emotional and stressful for all involved. In reading through the materials and listening to everything, there's a very large discrepancy between the complainant's account of what happened and the information received from the respondent and in the medical records. Lenny was a very ill patient at this point with several major problems. Diabetes mellitus, which was becoming difficult to control, pancreatitis, and this discovery of this mucocele. I think the key issue in this case is that the complainant was advised on several occasions and by more than one person that the patient needed surgery for the gallbladder removal. They discovered the mucocele. That's pretty standard. Surgery is indicated. Medical management is usually not successful. The respondent states that the complainant at that time said that she wouldn't put Lenny through surgery, and I think that was an entirely appropriate decision to make at that time. But nevertheless, if we were going to proceed, the patient needed surgery because of the likelihood of a rupture of that mucocele, which is exactly what happened. It ruptured. And we just heard about the buprenorphine. Well, the rupture of the mucocele is what caused the pain and then the subsequent attempt to control the pain. There would be no reason the respondent would withhold the information about the need for surgery. I think the ER personnel was even trying to assist with the transfer to a surgeon if that was the decision. The respondent and the other ER personnel applied, I think, appropriate diagnostics and treatment in this case, and some advanced treatments, CRI, drip, nasal gastric tube. There is an obvious communication problem. In my opinion, the ER personnel did communicate appropriately. There can always be personality differences, but there are multiple people involved in this communication. And sometimes in a very emotional, stressful situation, it's really hard to understand what's going on, to even hear everything that's being said, remembering. It's hard because these owners are under a tremendous amount of stress when these type of situations occur. So, this case, I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
I'm going to second, but I also want to make a comment because the owner was definitely concerned about the use of buprenorphine in that. So I wanted to specifically address that. Buprenorphine is actually one of the standard medications for pancreatitis and for abdominal pain. It's a a very safe medication, a very safe opioid to use in these situations. It has a ceiling effect. It's very hard, if not fairly impossible, to overdose on it. And it is one that has a very low incidence of causing nausea, which a lot of other opioids can. That abdominal pressure can cause major issues with organs that are kind of having issues in the abdomen. So I know there was a lot of concern around that with the owner, and I wanted to specifically address that it is hard to look at these medications and understand how they work and what's going on, but buprenorphine is actually very safe, one of the preferred medications for abdominal pain.
Thank you for clarifying that for me, for the non-vets on the board, so thank you.
Well, and I definitely feel like Dr. Knott's like kind of hit it on the head that there's a lot of communication issues here, right? And some of it is probably that it's an emergency and the owners aren't hearing everything and worried about their dog, and some of it is it's an emergency practice. And with emergency practices, you may not get that same level of communication that you get at a general practice where there's all the time in the world to, not all the time in the world, but time to really spend. And so, I mean, I think it was a perfect storm of how all of this came together and unfortunate. So, I mean, I don't want the owners to feel like, This wasn't heard. We heard it, and it's just a very unfortunate situation, and I feel bad for everybody involved in this one.
Thank you. So we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 2449. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you for being here today.
I have one more.
Sure.
Yeah. In this case, not regarding the case specifically, but there was something that came up in this case, issue regarding the abdominal ultrasound that was performed by the CBT. And it revolves around this idea of a preliminary report. The ER personnel indicated that there's a preliminary report followed by a final report, and it's that report which is then produced by a CBT who does the ultrasound that is a little concerning for me. It appears that the report, the preliminary report, is then relayed to the owner. Could that be a CBT making a presumptive diagnosis? In this case, as an example, if you want to look at it, the preliminary report says possibility of a developing mucoceal. The final report says mucoceal surgery. So in the case of an owner looks at this preliminary report, well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. And then hours later, we get a final report that says it is. And that's just an example of what can happen in these cases. So it's a concern for me, but I don't really know how to address it. The respondent shouldn't receive a letter of concern because it's a hospital policy. And I don't think it's worthy of opening a case against a responsible veterinarian. So my question is, if the other members of the board agree with me, can we do a letter just to the hospital with our concerns?
You'd have to open a case to do a letter of concern, but I am concerned.
So we have to have a case for a letter of concern.
If treatments are based around that preliminary diagnosis from a technician, I am concerned about that because, I mean, by statute, that is not
allowed. Yeah, that's my concern.
We're seeing that more and more.
I think without having more information, we wouldn't know that.
No,
because what I would say I could very easily see happening in this case is a technician doing the ultrasound, and a report could be as simple as, the liver was hyperechogenic, or the kidneys were measured 4.5 centimeters, or that's just matter of fact. That's a matter of getting the images and documenting it on a report. That's not necessarily making a diagnosis or providing treatment. If the veterinarian on that case chose to work off of the preliminary report and make a recommendation, that's on the veterinarian, and then they sent it in for a radiologist to review. I don't see anything wrong with what happened here. Nothing. Not one thing, because I go, if you start saying that veterinarians have to do all of the actual imaging, then we're going to backlog everything.
Not the imaging, but the interpretation. Just
right.
Like on the human side, the ultrasound technicians do it, but they will not comment on anything.
Not to the client. That I agree with that. But what I would say is that report that the technician...
is done by a radiologist on the human side.
It goes directly to the radiologist. Measurements and documentation of what came out of that, they go, and so did this one.
No, well, there was a preliminary diagnosis before that.
Because the veterinarian was involved. And if a veterinarian chooses to do that, that's their own case. I didn't see anywhere in here where the actual technician went and talked to the owner or made it. I think the veterinarian might have taken what they got from the ultrasound and the documentation and images that they saw, and they may have worked off of it, but I don't think that is a violation. That's that veterinarian's choice.
I think it's more of an open case against the premise holder to get more information on this person. Because like I said, we're seeing this more and more, and we've had this come up in front of us before with ultrasounds, with MRIs, these kinds of things. And this is something that is happening more and more because, yes, there are limited veterinarians around, and how are we making up for that, and are we making up for it in legal ways?
There's no way, though. Like, that's like saying, okay, as a veterinarian, if you're going to send off an x-ray for a radiologist to review, then don't even comment on it because you can't say anything.
A veterinarian is licensed to do that. A technician is not.
But that's who did it in this case. The veterinarian looked at the report from the technician.
I don't see that based on this.
I think the technician made a report, and the veterinarian made the
I make a motion to complaint against the premise holder.
Correct.
To investigate this.
Nikki, did you have any cut from the CDT?
I did. I could. Whenever I read that in the, you know, in the initial investigative, and like went back and looked at everything, of course it's like, oh yikes, you know, the way it was written. But then going back and looking at everything, I kind of go with more what Dr. James is saying, is that, so for example, if we're sent in to do X-rays, right? You know, we're going to take X-rays. We're going to tell, you know, the doctor, oh, we saw this, this, and this. And then there's going to be notes made, right? And the doctor is going to review them, sign them, publish them to the record or not, right? Same thing with ultrasound. If we're asked to collect images, we're going to collect those. We're going to make notes of what we did, what we saw. Ultrasound's a little bit different in the sense that when you capture a still image versus like those video images and, you know, can go up in the medical record, you're going to notate, I would say you're going to articulate a little bit more differences and nuances in ultrasound than you do in x-ray. And so again, a veterinarian is the one that ultimately is going to publish that right to the record or determine how they're going to utilize that information. So where I can understand the concern of making a diagnosis, a differential diagnosis, you know, those types of things we cannot do. We are also the advocate for the patient, and our responsibility is to communicate that to the veterinarian. So I didn't see where the CBT communicated that to the client or made a diagnosis in the record from what I was reading. So again, I can see where the concern is. I can see where you might propose that. I would disagree.
Thank you.
So how about we vote?
Well, there's no second yet. So.
Second.
Not yet. Yeah, it revolves around this preliminary report. And if you say to the owner, there's a preliminary report coming, and here's what it says, that to me, that's where we get, that's where the issue is. And if they would just not do that, I would be fine with it.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to open a case against the premise holder. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Nay. Sorry. Dr. Thompson, did you
nay.
Say?
Nay.
4-3.
Nay.
So 4-3. So motion fails. But thank you for...
Yeah, glad we had that discussion. I think it was needed.
Okay. Moving on, we are now on number 8, 2452, in regards to Natalie Soto, DVM. Anish, you can read the front row.
Case 2452, complaint is Linda Walters, respondent is Natalie Soto, BBM. On September 1st, 2023, Molly, a one-year-old golden retriever, was presented to respondent for a spay procedure. The surgery was performed and the dog was discharged later that day with carprofen, trazodone, and gabapentin. On September 3rd, 2023, the dog was presented to an emergency facility due to incision site drainage and dehiscence. The dog's incision was explored, resutured, and cultured. The dog was discharged with antibiotics. On September 5th, 2023, complaint reached out to respondents' premises to let them know what transpired over the weekend. She felt that due to the bacteria found on the culture, there was a breach in their sterility process. The committee concluded that no violations of the Veterinary Practice Act occurred. It was moved and seconded. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-0.
Okay. Thank you. We have Mr. Stoll here monitoring for the respondent, and then we do have the complainant. Linda is here. Linda, if you'd like to come forward. Thank you for being here today, Linda.
You
will state your name, and then I can give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
My name is Linda Walters.
Okay, thank you. And please note that we have all of the information that was received in the records.
Good morning. I just wanted to say this is my Molly. This is not Molly. Okay? I just want to say thank you for allowing me to attend this hearing to be the voice of Molly. As you know, Molly was brought in Arrowhead House on September 1st, 2023, to be spayed. I picked up Molly later that day to take her home, and she was given 3 medications. She got 3 medications, and one was for which she was excited, but she never received it because she remained calm. Molly wore her cone all the time, except for a few times when she was vibing or eating, and she wore it to bed and to go potty with a leash. I was with Molly 24/7. She was never left alone. Late Sunday, we were sitting there, and blood shot out of Molly across the room. I immediately put my hand on her stomach, and blood was on it. I called Arrowhead immediately, and it went to voicemail because it was a holiday weekend. The voicemail told me to call another vet they listed. When I called and explained to them what was going on, they told me they could not see her and take her to the emergency room. They gave me the address. During this time, the blood continued to shoot out of her stomach. I took her to the emergency room, and they had to reopen her and find her that she had infection and turned out to be staph. They cleaned her up, stapled her up, and gave her IV antibiotics and pill form. Now, they say it was a minute staph infection. That is because I caught it in time. If I would have waited until Tuesday, like they wanted me to, when they opened up, it would have been a lot worse. I called Arrowhead and spoke to Dr. Sherrill. I explained to him what happened. He told me I should have asked the vet to give her antibiotic and wait until Tuesday when they open. Now they want to give her antibiotics. After several phone calls and texts, they offered to pay half of the emergency bill. But I had to sign what I call a gag order. How can you go to a vet and not tell them about your dog? They stated they would send her medical records over to the vet so I could I would not have to talk about it. I tried to go to another vet for her shot, and when they asked me what vet was spayed, I told her Arrowhead had done it. When I got to the new vet, they refused to see her or my brother's dog. They said she was not a good fit. So what did Arrowhead tell them? This is very unprofessional for a vet and very against code. I think that it was very bad the way they treated Molly. I know the board committee recommend dismissal of this issue, but I do not agree. I brought a healthy dog to Arrowhead with no sign of staph and came out with a dog that had staph. They stated in the meeting that staph grows on your skin, and that's how she got it. When they did the surgery, they closed the first layer of skin, and thank God it was properly sterilized, because if staph would have gotten into that area, she would have become septic and died. Now that they were closing the second layer where the stitches are now, somehow that's where the staph came in between the first layer of the skin and the second layer of the skin. Either she touched something, laid a needle down, something, but that's how it entered Molly. Molly had, and I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing this wrong, serosonous discharge to the infection, causing the stitches to fail and swell, which made the stitches open. The wound was on top of where no rubbing could have occurred. Staph incubates between 1 to 6 hours with animals coming out of anesthesia with first 10 hours are usually sleeping and not walking around, so no way could she have infected herself. The committee stated that they don't give antibiotics to animals after surgery because it's harmful to animals. What harm did they call Molly by not taking the proper measure to make her safe? The $4 pill that could have saved Molly from the extra trauma that the vet caused by not taking the proper protocol. That $4 pill and the emergency vet saved by Molly's life. Things happen. But you own up to it. If they don't want to give the antibiotics, then it should be the choice of the pet owners, not theirs. She got the antibiotics she needed, and that saved Molly. The antibiotics that they could have gave her would have saved her a lot of trauma. For a 646 procedure of getting sprayed, I spent over $4,000. I would have paid anything to save my Molly, but I shouldn't have to do. They should have taken proper measures. My goal here today is that this never happens to another pet. To this vet, she's a dog. To me, she's my daughter, Molly. I just want to take the time to thank you for allowing me to be the voice of Molly. And no matter what this outcome is, I know Molly was heard. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. You may step back. And Dr. Thompson, you are the lead of this case.
Thank you. Yeah, so these are difficult cases. Obviously, when people bring their pets in for what is often referred to as a routine spay or neuter, what we forget is that there's always some sort of possibility of a complication in the surgery. And spays can be really difficult. In this case, you know, it sounds as though Molly did get a seroma, which can happen if the pet is looking at it and the owner states that we've had an e-collar. But it can also happen with just movement of the dog. And also if there's sutures that, for whatever reason, the dog's body does not, you know, it's a foreign object. As much as they are sterile, it's not something that normally resides in the body. And so the body can reject it and cause these seromas. And it can be very scary when that seroma does eventually rupture out of the skin and you see fluid coming out of what you would think is your healthy dog. In looking through the procedures that the doctor did and the surgery, I am not seeing a violation at this point. Yes, I do understand it was very interesting, their approach on, but with the, yes, they would pay things back, but with the signing of these documents, but I feel that's more of a legal matter, not a board matter. So in this case, I would recommend dismissal with no violation.
I'm going to second that and make comment. The infection that was there, the bacteria that was cultured with Staph pseudomonas, which is basically the normal bacteria that's on a dog's skin. That's the most common infection that we'll see after these kinds of things from a, I mean, if we had a unsterile procedure, a lot of times we'll see other bacteria, but Staph pseudomonas can easily get into the incision. Unfortunately, it's hard to say why it set up residence, what caused the seroma, was this the suture material, was it an infection, and what happened there, but I can't see a fault of the doctor for this, unfortunately, but I just can't see that for here. I wanted to address the routine use of antibiotics. That's not something we tend to do in veterinary medicine. I hate to use the phrase old medicine, but standard antibiotics after surgery, a routine surgery like that, which we all know no surgery is routine, but standard antibiotics is not something we typically do anymore because just like on the human side, when we see MRSAs, which is a very, very horrible infection that can lead to the loss of limbs or even the loss of life, we can see that with pseudomonas also. So while I do understand in hindsight, if we had an antibiotic that could have prevented this, that's also not the typical standard anymore after routine surgeries. So I just wanted to address that based on the concerns of the complaint.
Excuse me, I agree that this was a more likely a seroma. The infection part of it, we could probably, if we cultured all the seromas, we'd probably get that in a large number of cases. So this was a seroma. When we talk about the suture reaction, I've never understood that term, although I've used it a lot. I don't really know what that means, a suture reaction. Is that an allergic reaction? Is that inflammatory? What is it? And none of the suture companies ever address it. Suture reaction, but I zeroed in on the closure of this surgery in this case. This was a 78-pound young active golden retriever, and the veterinarian, I believe, was fairly new, inexperienced, and she stated she closed the linea alba with a continuous hot monochrome. And then because it was continuous, she put in some simple interrupted, I think that's fine, a subcutaneous continuous, and that's where the seroma developed, but that sounds fine. But then closed the skin with an intradermal using 2-0 monochrome in a 78-pound young active golden retriever, and then applied 2 simple interrupted sutures at the cranial and caudal aspects of the incision. No suture removal required. And my question is this okay? Is this standard practice? Is this standard minimum care? Is this okay? I question that.
So I guess I would question, Are you feeling that it should have been ought in the intradermal layer?
No, I'm that intradermal sutures have to be placed very stably and very, you have to get the dermis.
Yes.
If you're going to do intradermal.
Yes.
Okay, a lot of then doctors will then use glue on top of that because they're worried about it. Okay, but they don't want to do a suture removal or have the dog chewing at the sutures or licking.
Yeah.
And it works very well in a lot of cases. Cats, it works really well. 78-pound dog, if they were not placed securely, do we have a gap in the subcutaneous that led to seroma?
I don't know.
Yeah, I just zeroed right in on that and went, wow.
I will say when I was being instructed a few years ago that was actually how our closure was taught. So regardless of the size of your patient,
okay.
That is what we did. We always did intradermal closure on a spay. And yes, as time went on, my incisions were this big, and then eventually in shelter night they got this big. But that was standard.
And then I
almost exclusively use 2-aught and a subcuticular patterns for all my surgeries.
All of yours,
almost related. Yeah, I mean, I will sometimes add in like in a Great Dane extra suture or staples on the outside or something. Mm-hmm. I almost always use
there.
Yeah, I have no problem with 2-aught subcuticular.
If she was confident in her closure, why did she put a simple interrupted at the cranial and caudal end of the incision? Have you guys ever, were you taught that?
I was not taught that, but I mean, sometimes you make those split decisions, right? Especially when you're brand new, there might have been just a little, maybe your knot didn't bury as well as you had hoped for, and you're trying to cover that gap, and maybe they didn't have skin glue to apply to put that there, and she wanted to make sure that, I mean,
yeah,
that
I agree. That tells me that probably the bearing of the knot still needs more practice, which is not necessarily a bad thing. That's just a cosmetic thing.
Right.
But that it was kind of more to close it over, and we probably just need more practice on how to do technically bury that.
The reason I zeroed in on it, that's where the problem occurred.
Yeah. So, and I will every so often use a simple interrupted sutures on a spay or a neuter if I want to basically almost require that animal to come back, because most people will come back for a recheck. So if I have to take stitches out, that'll kind of force them back. But usually that's for some other reason to kind of ensure that they come back and see me, because I mean, that's pretty rare.
Okay.
That is a kind of a question, but that just in my mind says that we just didn't bury it properly. We're trying to make it as cosmetic as possible.
Okay, so thank you for the discussion. We've got a motion and a second to dismiss case 2452. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
I have one comment on this case. I don't think it relates to the doctor involved, but anyone concerned with the statement from the owner about another clinic being given information that would have deterred them from even seeing the dog? I mean, that kind of has me a little uncomfortable that as a profession we would be doing that or potentially doing that, because I don't even know what happened, but like, and we don't have enough information to go off of, but it gives me a little bit of angst.
I will say that when it comes to medical records, I will put absolutely everything that happens into a medical record, exact words that are used, that kind of stuff, because, I mean, you want to make sure it's complete and you want to have everything documented. And sometimes when I get records from another hospital and I see certain things in there, I'm like, yeah, I don't want to get into this. So I can't say why this happened, I can't say what, but I don't see a fault of anything there. And I can't say if there's any evidence that something was said nefariously after the fact, just based on records itself. But yeah, I will see records that have certain things in, and I'm like, I'm not accepting this person as a patient, and that's up to the owner, or that's up to the veterinarian and the clinic owner, and I have no problems with that. We can all serve who we want. But if there's something nefarious, if there's proof of something being said that's unethical, that's a different story, but I don't see that here.
Yeah, we don't have enough information to go off of, unfortunately. Because that was probably after the records came in.
Yeah. So that's a hard one. I mean, I know that I put everything in the record and I will read records before I accept a patient as a new patient.
Yeah.
So who knows what that...
Yeah, we don't know. But it makes me uncomfortable that somebody would be turned away under a situation like this. Like, it doesn't seem like the case was that out of hand. Like we've seen cases things have gone really awry, and then I'm like, okay, I can kind of see where somebody might not want to get into it, but this is not that. This is
pretty
typical,
here.
And I'm like, God, that just gives me a little bit of uncomfortableness, but no need to belabor it. I want to make a point that there's something fishy about that to me.
And I'm not saying, when I'm reading through this, I can sense frustration with the owner, which is acceptable. I totally understand that. I don't see anything bad going on here. Where I've had records where I put in multiple swear words that were specifically said to me,
Yep.
And like I said, those are the ones more I'm talking about. I don't see anything bad in here, but I mean, you never know, unfortunately.
All right, thank you for the discussion. We're going to go on to number 9 now, 2455, in regards to Leslie Ash, DVM. Annalise, if you'll read the summary.
Case 2455, the complaint is Elaine Anderson. Respondent is Leslie Ash, DVM. On September 25th, 2023, Kobe, a 3.5-year-old male German Shepherd Malinois mix, was presented to respondent on surgery for concerns of bloat or GDV. Respondent evaluated the dog and deemed the patient stable with no evidence of GDV at the time. Based on the evaluation, respondent felt the dog could wait through the shift change to be seen. Respondent stated that complainant was offered a treatment plan for radiographs with radiologist consultation, which was declined. Complainant was considering taking the dog to the primary care veterinarian when they opened, but elected to wait until the dog could have an ultrasound performed. Respondent's associate, Dr. Hu, evaluated the dog, performed diagnostics, and determined the dog had GDV. Emergency surgery was recommended. Complainant elected to take the dog to Dove Valley for surgery. When the dog's abdomen was opened, the stomach was non-viable, therefore the dog was humanely euthanized. The committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act occurred. It was moved and seconded, and the motion was approved with a vote of 3-0.
Okay. Thank you. We have Mr. Stoll here monitoring for the respondent.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And then we do have the complainant, Elaine, here. If you would like to come forward.
Okay, most of what she said is what I wrote, because that's what we went through. But I did write it out, because for 5 minutes I can probably read down through it, I can think and talk. This is Kobe, this is who we lost.
I'm so sorry.
I truly believe when I went in, he could have been saved. All they had to do was listen, and that's what they didn't do. So, we'll just go over kind of what was said there. On September 25th, 2023, I lost Kobe to bloat GDV. He was three and a half years old, German Shepherd Malinois. My son made the call of bloat at home. He is not a doctor. We got to emergency within 30 minutes. I told them bloat was very possible. After being evaluated, he was returned to me, at which time I was told by the admin staff, not a doctor or a vet tech, that he did not have bloat. A doctor was not available. It was suggested to do an ultrasound when they had time to rule out any other issues. So I waited. I did make an appointment with his vet at 10 o'clock. But I did that because I was told on several different occasions he'd not have looked. So I waited for the ultrasound about 3 hours total, then told by Dr. Howe that he had GDV. I told her I was in at 6:30, approximately 6:30 in the morning, and I was told several different times he was not life-threatening, they were doing a shift change, they didn't have time, he did not have bloat. Three different times. And she looked at me and said, oh, we never told you that. And so 5.5 hours later, he passed away in surgery, more in surgery. They just couldn't finish the surgery because there was no point in it. So I called his veterinarian and found a doctor at Deer Valley waiting to do surgery. When I left to go to Deer Valley, I did not wait to get his patient history report. When I went back later to get it, they put in the report. I refused, one, an exam. We only had an exam. Two, an x-ray. An x-ray was never brought up to me, only an ultrasound. Now, the person that told me he didn't have bloat is just admin. I assume that they're admin. So they're, it's being passed on to them to give me this information, and that shouldn't have happened. So I did not refuse an x-ray. No one mentioned that, only an ultrasound later. If I had been If it had been suggested, I would have agreed. Money was not an issue. He had his own care credit card and $8,000 in major medical. Today, I have 5 minutes. On September 25th, I did not have 5 minutes with a doctor. If I had, the first question I would have asked, what steps were taken to come to the decision he did not have GEB? Second question would have been, what else can we do to be sure that answer would or should have been an X-ray? How can my son make the call afloat, and yet within 30 minutes, a doctor did not see what he saw, unless she never looked at him? And just had the admin bring him back to me to tell me it wasn't life-threatening, and he didn't have GDB. And when I went to Deer Valley, I had 5 minutes with a doctor then to ask any questions before I went into surgery. Just 5 minutes could have made a difference in life and death. Because at 6:30, if an X-ray was done, they would have seen the bloat, the GDB, and we wouldn't have needed an ultrasound. And trust me, they did not offer an X-ray, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm wrong, we're wrong. My son's not a doctor, but he was able to make a call where a doctor could not. So towards the end, Kobe suffered. At Deer Valley, he was crying, and his back legs started to give out. He did not have to die. I think he was in phase one GDB at 6:30. 5 hours later at Deer Valley, he was probably in phase three. Death is imminent at that time. Vet med could have released the pressure with a stomach tube. With a stomach tube, he could have recovered at phase one. Even in phase two, recovery was still a possibility. He was a good boy. He did not deserve this. I was his world. He loved me so much and trusted me. To see him suffer at the end broke my heart. I should not have believed them and should have taken him to another emergency. And if they didn't have time for him, they should have suggested that. They should have said, if you really think he has bloat, we're pressed for time, we're doing a shift change, maybe you want to take him to another emergency. Give me that option. I was not given options, because I gladly would have done that, and I should have. I'm a second opinion person. I should have done that. So that's my responsibility in here. I should have just took him and walked out the door, because I first went to First Pet, not realizing that they weren't 24 hours anymore. So I got there about 6:10 in the morning. They didn't open till 7. That's how I got to Vet Med, because I looked it up on the phone, the next closest one, let's go there. I mean, I didn't even close my back door, my front door, I didn't put a leash on them. I have a card here that I keep on my refrigerator. It's signs of bloat, what to look for on my refrigerator, have emergency numbers, different things that give you clues to what to look for. So, I don't know. It's just almost like they cared more about their time than they did his life. He was savable. At 6:30 in the morning, phase one, they could have done something to help him. They did more to help them than they did him. And it shouldn't have worked out this way. And if anything good can come out of this, maybe the vet will remember the next time if a situation like this comes to them and an owner comes up with a life or death diagnosis themselves, they need to be taken seriously, they need to be listened to, and they should have done this X-ray. And I don't know why the X-ray comes back on me. I would not have refused it. I mean, I agreed to an ultrasound, which is a lot more money than an X-ray. So that's all I have.
Thank you. Again, we're so sorry. You can go ahead and step back. And Dr. Wright, you are the lead on this one.
Yes, thank you, and so sorry for your loss. So going through this and reading, we have some conflicting stories on kind of what's going on between the veterinarian and the complainant here. It sounds like an initial presentation. We were offered x-rays or possibly asked about it specifically, and then they were declined. And then on re-presentation at 7:55, like I said, we went a little bit further. So could things have been caught earlier if that would have been approved? It's hard to say at that point, because GDVs can go from pretty much not there to dead within an hour. I mean, if they really endure is really bad, we can have major problems. We're having conflicting stories here, and I don't know if anybody else.